Santa Fe this week. I'm Joey Peters.
And I'm Justin Horwath.
And it's the Weekly Word. Matthew Reichbach is out on assignment this week, and Justin's filling in. And we're going to have investigative reporter Peter St. Cyr as our guest. We'll be talking about the recent flap with the Bernalillo County Executive Director of the GOP and his statements calling a young female activist a radical bitch, getting him suspended.
And we're also going to be asking Peter about his investigative cover story published in the Santa Fe Reporter called Nuts to Butts, a very controversial alleged prison control technique.
Keep with us, and we'll be back after this break. Tuesday night, Bernalillo County Commissioner Steve Cush got in a little bit of trouble, well, more like a lot of trouble, after making some comments on his Facebook account at a Bernalillo County Commission hearing. The subject of the hearing was raising the minimum wage from $7.50 an hour to $8.50 an hour over a two-year period. There, besides Cush, were some representatives with a pro-union labor group called Working America who are testifying in favor of the minimum wage increase. When a 19-year-old female activist with Working America came forward, Cush wrote on his Facebook account, "Nice hat, Working America chick, but damn, you are a radical bitch." Later in the evening, he posted more updates to his account calling Commissioner Maggie Hart Stebbins a Gestapo leader when Working America State Director Chelsea Evans came and testified. Cush wrote, "Uh-oh, another Working America chick, nice boots. I know she makes more than minimum wage." At that point, GOP political consultant Bob Cornelius responded to Cush's Facebook update by saying, "Maybe she uses those boots to walk Central Avenue. Even in this economy, she can exchange bumper cables for boots." That reference to Central Avenue is a reference to prostitution. Now, perhaps these Facebook exchanges were meant to be just between friends, but obviously when you're as high profile as a executive director of the Republican Party of a county, other people are going to see them. And so a lot of people saw these comments, and it led to the next day Cush getting suspended temporarily from his position. And Bob Cornelius and Cush both issued their apologies. It had a lot of effect and went up to national coverage in the Huffington Post. Our correspondent, Peter St. Cyr, had a interview with Chelsea Evans to get her reaction to all this stuff. And I think one thing she notes is that the proposal to increase the minimum wage passed, and that's where the focus should be. Well, let's listen into Peter's talk with Chelsea.
I was clearly saddened and disappointed to see individuals making such derogatory comments. Especially when I think there was a really great public discourse yesterday evening at the county commissioner's meeting around this very important issue of minimum wage.
Where do you think comments like that come from?
I think that's an interesting question. I think, you know, we could honestly debate and talk about that all day in terms of what folks' motives are when they say the things that they say. You know, for me, I tried to, you know, look beyond that and again, look at the victory that we had and really focus in on that and less on the comments that were made.
So you don't think that they were made to intimidate you and your presentation of the substantive issue, but maybe it represents, Pat Davis says, the view of Republicans about young women that are becoming active in civic discourse?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we, both myself and our member who were targeted in the comments last night, I think we both you know, I remember had an amazing poem that she read in front of the county commission. She's a very strong, strong young woman who, you know, voiced her concern on this very important issue and was giving not just a voice to herself, but giving a voice to all the other workers that don't have a voice currently in our system. And so I just think any time a voice is stifled because of a derogatory comment, it's very unfortunate, and it hurts the entire community.
Steve Kush got a 5-day suspension. Is that sufficient?
When I look at what can be done to sort of fix what happened last night, nothing can take away what was said. Nothing can, quote unquote, fix what was said last night, and I think that's unfortunate. I think when looking forward, you know, Working America, we go door to door in the community every single night. We talk to Democrats, we talk to Republicans, we talk to independents. And the biggest thing we hear from everyday working families here in New Mexico is that they just want to be able to put food on their table, make sure that their kids are getting a quality education, and that they have access to affordable health care. And so I think, you know, the comments that were made by these individuals, as unfortunate as they are, we need to continue to look forward in how we can protect working families here in New Mexico. And that's our, you know, Working America, that's our primary goal, is making sure that we're not necessarily, you know, addressing the pros and cons of the political parties, but that we're addressing the needs of working families here in New Mexico.
When you entered politics and became engaged civically, you kind of knew that it was a rough and tumble sport, and that sometimes, you know, people use words to disparage the opposing side all the time. But do you think that kind of negative and nasty discourse is discouraging young people and even other people from becoming engaged in civic discourse? And is this another example of why Americans just say, I tune out politics, I tune out government, because it is just too nasty?
People don't want our politicians playing politics with their lives. They want to be able to have policies that are impactful on their lives, making sure that they can go to the doctor and making sure that they can when they send their kids to school, that that's a quality school and that those children are getting the best education they can possibly get. That we have politicians and elected officials who are focused on creating good, sustaining jobs in our community. So, you know, I think what I feel like you're getting at is, you know, folks are frustrated. Folks are definitely frustrated, not only necessarily by, you know, comments like this, but just the idea that sometimes politics are played over the actual issues that impact working families. The reason I got into this business was to have that conversation with individuals about what was important to them. You know, I know for myself and our member, this will not stop us. We will continue to fight for working families. Working America will continue to be a huge advocate here in New Mexico to make sure that everyday New Mexicans are given an opportunity to get involved in a healthy way and in a way that's meaningful.
So, Ms. Evans, I know that when you spoke to some of the national media outlets earlier today, Steve Kush had not yet apologized. He has sent out an email and is apologizing. He did get a 5-day suspension. And do you, one, accept his apology? And two, again, do you think 5 days is sufficient, or should he resign and go wash his mouth out with soap?
You know, when Mr. Cornelius, the other individual involved with the comments, made an apology this morning, we accepted that. If Mr. Kush has made an apology, we will accept that as well. I think, you know, again, sort of touching on his 5-day suspension. I don't honestly think that I'm the right person to make that judgment call. Again, I don't think anything will actually fix what has been done last night. I think the thing that we need to do is just move forward and make sure that we are continuing to fight and make sure that New Mexico is a place that is prospering and is a place that works for all New Mexicans.
So I'm here with Peter St. Cyr and Justin Horwath. And so we just listened, Peter, to your interview with Working America State Director Chelsea Evans. What were some things you took away from that interview?
That she's going to be moving on, and understood that a lot of the political discourse, while unsavory and unacceptable, isn't going to distract her from working to spread the message to help working families, poor people, and folks that don't often hear or have a chance to have their voice heard in the community.
Now, have you gotten a chance to read the apologies by both Bob Cornelius and Steve Kush?
I did.
And what was your response to those?
Well, I guess my response would be that Bob Cornelius is genuinely concerned, recognized that he made an error, and immediately took them down off of his website or the posting sites, Facebook
right.
and Twitter. And Steve Kush, I got some emails from him and the official apology, and I think that, you know, he says that he's been in politics for 20 years. He came here from New Jersey, where it's even maybe as rough and tumble,
yeah.
and just recognized that in, you know, 2013, those kind of things just really are not acceptable. But I also think that there are a lot of folks who, you know, we saw it with Alan Weiner and Brett Favre and others, and they just don't recognize, like Matt Rybak, who's usually hosting the show, will always tell you that, like the anchor up in that was debuting, I think, in North Dakota or South
uh-huh.
Dakota, the microphone is always on. And when you tweet something, it's instant, and there are people watching. It's not just private with your friends. The public is watching. And you almost have to have some decorum before you post or hit send or tweet.
Right, right. I think it's worth pointing out that I think it was right in the morning after Bob Cornelius removed his remark and sent his apology out. Here's what he said to Chelsea Evans. I do not know you, and it is unfair for me to make such degrading comments in a public forum such as Facebook about someone I do not know. He later said, I do applaud you for standing up and fighting for issues you believe in. Steve Kush's apology came late in the afternoon. He had given some media reports. Or had said some apologies in some media reports before that, but that took him much longer. And here he says, in part of his apology, on a personal level, having two sisters, I most certainly should have known better. I know how I would feel if the shoe were on the other foot, and I sincerely apologize to both young women in question and her family for my insensitive and moronic comments. Yeah, so like I said before, I think, you know, Bob Cornelius, I know he had a little trouble in his campaign for land commissioner with hit some things with our paper. But in general, he's new to the game, fairly young. Steve Kush, though, however you have said, has been in this for 20 years. And I believe, how long is his suspension?
It was 5 days, and one of the reasons he may have been late releasing his own written formal apology via email was I think that right before he got suspended, the chairman had Kush write the chairman's notice about Kush's suspension. So he was suspended, but they were, I believe Kush was writing some of those things
oh, really?
For Frank Ruvolo. I'll have to check my email again,
yeah.
So don't hold me to that. But I think I remember looking at it and thinking, wow, isn't that strange? You know, the guy who's getting suspended is writing the suspension email blast for the chairman well, and distributing it for him.
Yeah, maybe it shows how small the staff is at the Bernalillo County Republican Party. And Also, yeah, and Bob Cornelius is kind of in the, you know, a private consultant now, and whereas Kush is, was a pub, or was at least with the party.
Well, you know, and he is operating a firm that does at least at some point public relations and should be fully aware of what's going on with social media and the fact that people can see it pretty readily. And, you know, this is the first time that actually I heard the attribution and the fact that Kush was thinking about his own sisters and the women in his life. And I think that because he's gone that far in self-reflecting shows a genuine sorrow and understanding that what he did was wrong, and that, you know, even Chelsea Evans said that, you know, things were said that weren't wrong and that she's willing to move forward. But it's got to be about having everyone's voice heard during those kind of public debates at a county commission.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting how quickly that I saw that the party, the, both the state party and kind of the Bernalillo Republican Party kind of disowned these comments.
Yeah.
Almost. They sent out press releases right away, immediately, saying we, you know, these are comments made by two individuals, and this is no way representative of the party.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
And the timing couldn't really be worse for Steve Kush or Bob Cornelius because of everything that the National Republican Party has been trying to do since the fall election, where they lost, they went into retreat. They're trying desperately to rebrand themselves to reach out to diverse audiences,
to women and minorities, basically, yeah, people of color, all the people they lost in the election.
But then you have all these flare-ups still happening around the country. And while I think that Kush and Cornelius are both genuinely all apologetic and recognize that what they did was wrong, part of the problem is these kind of things go viral quickly, like it did yesterday with Huffington Post and some of the other national media outlets. And these two cats, their names are going to be in Google for a very long time associated with, you know, calling these women a radical bitch and maybe inferring that one of them was wearing boots, which Pat Davis told me were awesome, and maybe being associated with prostitution or making that inference. And so that lives in Google for a long time. And so while they may be able to come back to work and do really good work in the community, their names are going to be associated with mud for a very long time.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You see, you're talking about kind of the flare-ups across the country. In the past year, we have seen a lot of Republicans kind of make inappropriate comments, and that does go viral. And now it each time it happens, it almost becomes a narrative for these are the views of the party. And it seems like, you know, we got the just individuals saying these things, and then the party always comes out and disavows those comments. And
And now both of you mentioned negative comments, and obviously they go both ways. And the Huffington Post article linked to a video, Peter, that you made a few years ago interviewing. Actually, they posted the video, a YouTube video you did a few years ago interviewing Kush, who was campaign manager for Janice Arnold Jones's governor run. And ever since.
And so, you know, these are really no better than what the two gentlemen tweeted or put up on Facebook. And, you know, it's got to be fair on both sides of this game. But at the end of the day, clearly these personal attacks have to stop, because it's things like this that we talked about in the interview with Chelsea that turned my sister and my brother-in-law and my brother off of not only politics and voting, but government. And so when you have people that aren't paying attention to the government, that's when things start happening that are bad, like, you know, the loss of civil rights, material that is going into developing a policy not being understood, and people getting to take advantage without having civic discourse, which I've been talking about all week. And that's why when you start attacking someone's personal character, their looks, their fact that they're bald or fat or wear a Bluetooth earpiece or have fabulous boots, then, you know, you kind of already lost the argument.
What, Peter, I wanted to ask, what when this commissioner said we need to legislate fairness, can you talk more about what they meant by that?
Well, they were addressing the minimum wage, which approved on a 3-2 vote. And Commissioner Art De La Cruz at one point in talking about why he was going to support the increase in the minimum wage from $7.50 to $8.50 in unincorporated parts of the city in the county areas, talked about, unfortunately, the need to legislate fairness.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think what is interesting about, you know, the reason that we highlighted these YouTube comments, whenever somebody makes personal attacks, it's just going to go both ways, and the discussion is just going to go downhill. And it's pretty unfortunate and sad, and it does take away from maybe some of the real political issues that we need to talk about.
Well, with that note, let's talk, Peter, about a story you did for the reporter here a few weeks ago, Nuts to Butts. Now, we've talked in earlier podcasts about how there was controversy with the cover, and which had my legs on it, my bare legs. But really, what was being lost in that whole discussion was what this story was about. So can you tell us exactly what Nuts to Butts is?
Sure. There are about 525 inmates who are suing the Department of Corrections for something that happened to them between 2009, the summer, and winter of 2010, where the guards and the warden were experimenting with new controlled seating techniques that allowed them, they thought, to take control of inmates during serious incidences, including major disturbances. In January 2010, a new inmate arrived and quickly determined or heard a rumor. And this rumor was about inmates starting fights to cause a disturbance that would allow them to take hostages of the guards, steal their keys, and escape. And so the corrections department has a correctional emergency response team called CERT. And they decided to enter the housing area of a general population unit filled with sex offenders and other inmates that have no sex offense prosecutions or convictions, and make the men strip completely, cough, and once there was no contraband or weapons determined, under orders of the CERT members, march to a gym. And normally, what I've learned in reporting this story is that in a correctional situation, especially when there's a disturbance, you want to have space between men. And the reason between that is so that you don't know which prisoners hate which prisoners, and by creating space, you're not going to have sub-instances of this reported or alleged major escape plan, which, by the way, they interviewed and reported and never were able to substantiate from the snitch.
Really?
And so once inside the gym, they made all these prisoners straddle each other.
Now, this was about 25 of them or more?
The January the 25th incident, I believe there was right around 100.
100?
Yeah.
Okay. So
very close to 100.
They made them strip their clothes off. What else?
They marched to the gym and were told to sit on the floor and to wrap their legs around the man in front of them. When some inmates didn't sit close enough, they were told, while there are dogs in the gym and paintball guns or stun guns, maybe even shotguns, it's never really been determined, to put their genitals on the butt in front of the man, on the man in front of them. They wanted them so close that they could rest their forehead on the back of the man in front of them.
Now, did they have underwear on?
They were semi-nude.
Okay. But still.
The thing was that for straight men, or any kind of man, actually, even if they're gay, it was really the inmates' view that it was non-consensual touching.
Right. Forced.
We previewed a gentleman, an inmate named John Oates, whose name is on top of the legal caption on the federal filing. And he just said it was the weirdest feeling having his inner thighs touch the outer thighs of another man in a non-consensual kind of control technique. There were people there that observed it, maybe even women, deputy wardens, and the inmates are suing the Department of Corrections for pain and suffering. Part of the pain was that they were ordered to sit on this floor for hours at a time. So long that after a while, men began peeing on the man in front of them. There were pools of urine, allegedly, on the gym floor. And we know that the likelihood is strong because, you know, in interrogatories, inmates were saying they were forced to clean it up the next day. Wow. They also want a court to permanently order the Department of Corrections to never use this technique again.
How many times did this happen?
Well, so we reported on one incident, but there may be up to four other incidences that it happened during the tenure of the Central New Mexico Correctional Facility Warden Anthony Romero, who, by the way, after this happened, it's come out that he was the warden when an inmate alleges that he was raped by a guard. These controlled seating techniques that everyone was calling nuts to butts ended as soon as Warden Anthony Romero became the Associate Director of Adult Prison statewide.
And that's where he is now?
Correct.
Well, that's nice to know.
And so what was the purpose of sitting nuts to butts? Can you kind of, you know, maybe tell us a little more about the motives of corrections officials?
So the motives, according to the correction officials, were that they were trained, maybe by Homeland Security, that this was the best way to control inmates in some sort of terrorist plot or some sort of hijacking. And what it really may have evolved from was the Chechenian school hostage situation where 400 or 500 people were taken hostage for 3 or 4 days. And at the end of it, some of the rebels and the revolutionaries and the terrorists were trying to intermingle with the victims. And it was hard for rescuers or first responders to determine who was a good guy and who was a bad guy. And so by locking them in this way, it was apparently a way to teach law enforcement so that if you're at a theater, Justin, and it's taken over, in a civilian world, this might work. But in corrections, you want to have space between men. And the reason they were using it was to control. The inmates say it was nothing more than a way to sexually humiliate them to show them who was in control. There are people that say that Anthony Romero, the warden, was running up and down the aisles saying, you know, you're sitting like this because you're my bitches and I'm in control.
Peter, now there's a class action lawsuit from some of the prisoners.
And former
prisoners.
So there's two lawsuits. For some reason, inmates are in one lawsuit and former inmates are in a different lawsuit.
And how much, and you know, are we getting a sense of how much this could cost the state at all?
Well, you know, you never know what a jury is going to do. I'm sure you wouldn't predict it. I don't even know if this will ever reach a jury. Certainly, there's usually settlement talks before, but that's getting way ahead because there's I did ask the attorneys who weren't very willing to talk about anything about this case on when they predicted a trial might happen, and the earliest from both sides was sometime like next year. So we're still a long way away from any kind of adjudication.
And the American Civil Liberties Union got involved in this, correct?
Yeah, you know, their concern was not to humiliate prisoners, that when you go to jail, even though you may have done wrong and you're paying time for your conviction, that you still are protected against cruel and, in this case, unusual punishment. They're also concerned that at one point in our reporting, we found out that the corrections facility had not reported this to the accrediting agency until after the lawsuit was filed. And so the defense or the ACLU would say they were trying to hide it, and they could no longer hide it once there was a lawsuit, and that it's important for correctional facilities, whether they be state-run, private-run, or maybe county-run, to do accurate reporting so that the public can scrutinize what's happening behind the gates of a prison.
And it sounds like this practice has ended. This is no longer the nuts and bolts practices.
So it ended under Bill Richardson's Corrections Secretary Joe Williams. As soon as he heard about it, he put a stop to it statewide, even though it had only been used at one facility. The new Corrections Secretary, Greg Marcantel, has said that he keeps the option open to use it, but there may be legitimate reasons to use it, but at this point they're not using it and they don't have no plans to use it, but he would not definitively said that it's been ruled out. It is still an option in their arsenal.
You can read this story, Nuts to Butts, at sfreporter.com. I think it's one of the most read in our column right now, so just check that on the right side of the webpage. And Peter, it's good to have you on. Peter St. Cyr is an investigative reporter. You can read his work at the Santa Fe Reporter and at New Mexico Telegram once in a while. And I'm Joey Peters at the Santa Fe Reporter.
And I'm Justin Horwath at the Santa Fe Reporter.
And thank you very much for having me on this week.
All right, we'll be back next week.
Hey, yo, kid, bust this. It's time to drop the flavor. I'm fly as can be. I'm rhyming all my good behavior from New York City. Kicking dope lines at your saber. Take it from the top. I cut MCs just like a razor. It's time to kick, because I always do the trick. The shit that you always popping all amount to a flick. Stick niggas up with the hype rhyme filled with ammo. Blast on the pass, bullets passing through your abdomen. Win 10-10, I troop in a bench. My friends is down in the dumps, because I cast in on the winds. Hence the chickens laying low. Suck